Good afternoon. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the August 3rd, 2020 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Management Committee. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good afternoon. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, and specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during this meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the commissioners and participating staff to please mute your phones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having difficulties with this audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
This is Carol Ventura. Nicole Clement, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Good afternoon, everyone. Pursuant to Executive Order 2046, extended by Executive Order 2020-53, and as may be further amended or extended, this meeting is being held via teleconference. Members of the public can visit the Rhode Island Housing website to view the agenda and information on the actions being taken. In the event this teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect and audio is restored. I would now like to provide some additional guidance to our committee members and staff as they participate in this meeting. First, Committee Chairman Brett Smiley will preside. Next, please remember to state your name prior to speaking. And finally, please remember to mute your telephone line when you are not speaking, and we appreciate your cooperation. Now I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Smiley to call the meeting to order.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Nicole, Carol, and CJ. This is Brett Smiley. I would like to call the August 3rd meeting of the Management Committee of the Board of Commissioners of Rhode Island Housing to order, and I'll ask Carol Ventura to please conduct a roll call.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. I will now conduct a roll call of members of the Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, and Rhode Island Housing staff in attendance. Chairman Nicholas Retsina.
Here.
Commissioner Brett Smiley.
Here.
Commissioner Seth Magaziner.
Leanne Byrne is on the phone as designated treasurer magaziner.
Thank you. Commissioner Steve McAllister.
Here.
Staff of Rhode Island Housing, James Comer.
Here.
Lisa Primiano.
Here.
Cara LaChapelle.
Here.
Bernadette MacArthur.
Here.
Leslie McKnight.
Here.
Christine Hunsinger.
Here.
Barbara Sarand.
Here.
Nicole Clement.
Here.
Anne Berman.
Here.
Michael DiCaro.
Here.
Commissioner Smiley, the roll call is complete.
Thank you, Carol. Again, this is Brett Smiley. I would like to introduce committee action item number one, approval of the minutes from the Management Committee meeting held on June 8, 2020. I would like to ask a member of the committee to please make a motion to approve.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Is there someone who'd like to second the motion?
This is Steve. I'll second.
Thank you, Steve. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I'll ask General Counsel Nicole Clement to please call a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the minutes of the Management Committee meeting held on June 8, 2020, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous.
Thank you. This is Brett Smiley. I'd like to introduce committee action item number 2, recommendation for the approval of engagement of document custodian. And we'll ask Carol Ventura to please introduce the item.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Carol Ventura. Bernadette MacArthur, Director of Finance, will present this action.
Thank you, Carol. Good afternoon. This is Bernadette MacArthur, Director of Finance. For some brief background on this request, pooling loans into Ginnie Mae Securities and selling whole loans to Fannie Mae is a routine part of Rhode Island Housing's loan finance strategy. As part of allowing an institution to pool and sell loans, both Ginnie Mae and Fannie Mae require that the institution partners with an approved document custodian. The document custodian is responsible for reviewing loan documents submitted by an institution and certifying to either Ginnie Mae or Fannie Mae that the loan is in good order for purchase. The document custodian also keeps required loan documents in their custody for the pooled life of all submitted loans. For many years up to now, Rhode Island Housing has utilized document custodian services provided by the Bank of New York Mellon. In March of this year, we received correspondence from Ginnie Mae that the Bank of New York Mellon had been removed from their approved document custodian list, and that those institutions utilizing the Bank of New York as a document custodian are required to cease doing business with the Bank of New York's document custodian team by October of this year. Shortly after we received this guidance from Ginnie Mae, we posted an RFP to the Rhode Island Housing website seeking proposals from approved document custodian firms. Management decided that it would be prudent to move our Fannie Mae business and future Freddie Mac business to a new document custodian as well. We received 3 responses to the RFP and formed a committee to evaluate these responses. 2 firms were chosen to participate in virtual interviews, which were held in early July, and references were contacted for both of these firms. Respondents were evaluated based on multiple criteria, including their previous experience, their capacity to perform necessary functions, and their proposed fee structures. U.S. Bank was scored the highest by all committee members due to their extensive experience and strong presence as a leading document custodian in the industry. Additionally, U.S. Bank proposed the lowest fee structure of the 3 respondents, with their proposed fees being very much in line with what we are currently paying to the Bank of New York. In contacting references, Mass Housing, among others, provided positive feedback regarding the document custodian services that they receive from U.S. Bank. Therefore, due to the firm's extensive experience, proposal of the lowest fee structure, and the strong positive feedback we received from references, including an HFA client, staff requests approval to engage U.S. Bank in providing Rhode Island Housing with their document custodian services. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Are there questions for Bernie before we entertain a motion?
I have one question. This is Nick. I think U.S. Bank is the right firm given the track record. Are there any transitional questions or issues of getting from one to the other? Any risk involved in the transition from one custodian to another?
It will be a very involved process to move all of our existing documents from the Bank of New York to U.S. Bank, but we've, in part of the interview process, had a discussion regarding how they handle that process, and it seems very well controlled, and we were informed by references that they had a very smooth transition when they switch their document custodians. So while there is risk involved, they seem to control it really well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Nick. Are there other questions from the committee? Hearing none, I will ask for a motion to approve the recommendation.
So moved. This is Nick.
Thanks, Nick. Is there a second?
Leanne, I second.
Thank you, Leanne. Any questions or comments on the motion? I'll ask Nicole Clement to please take a roll call vote then.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the engagement of document custodian to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Brett Smyth. I'd like to introduce committee action item number 3, recommendation for the approval of delegation of corporate authority for purposes of government National Mortgage Association, also known as Ginnie Mae, NBS programs. Carol, if you could introduce the item or turn it right over to Bernie.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Carol Ventura. Bernadette McArthur, Director of Finance, will present this action.
Hi, thank you, Carol. This is Bernadette McArthur. As a routine part of our relationship with Ginnie Mae, Ginnie Mae requires that we maintain a list of Rhode Island housing employees and officers that are approved by our Board of Commissioners to conduct business with Ginnie Mae on behalf of Rhode Island Housing for both our single family and multifamily business lines. Ginnie Mae requires that these authorized individuals be approved in name rather than in title, and that independent lists are submitted for both the single and multifamily lines of business. Additional to this standard requirement, in order for Rhode Island Housing to engage a new document custodian, Ginnie Mae requires that we receive board approval for new submissions of authorized officers. These submissions presented today will supersede any prior submissions or designations. To meet these requirements and to keep our list of authorized officers current, we request approval of the resolutions designating employees and officers authorized to do business with Ginnie Mae on Rhode Island Housing's behalf. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernadette. Are there any questions on the item before we entertain a motion? Hearing none. I take a motion to approve action item number 3.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Leanne. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Steve.
Steve, thank you. Any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Nicole Clement to please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the delegation of corporate authority for purposes of the Ginnie Mae MBS programs to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Ritzina.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. This is Brett Smiley. I will now move on to committee action item number 4, recommendation for the approval of authority to adopt multifamily development bond general resolution and supplemental resolution for series 2020 in the amount of $135 million. Carol Ventura, if you could introduce the item.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Carol Ventura. Carol LaChapelle, CFO, will present this action.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is Carol LaChapelle. This resolution is a request for authority to issue up to $135 million in our multifamily development bonds. Now that the municipal bond market has stabilized since the beginning of the pandemic, investors are more engaged and rates are extremely favorable for bond issuance. We're currently working on a multifamily bond issuance that should price by the end of this month and close in September for a total of $45 million. That particular bond issue includes two multifamily developments that have been previously approved by the board and a piece of refunding of older bonds at favorable rates. We believe that the authorized amount that we are requesting of $135 million should last us approximately a year to a year and a half, depending on the market and the deals that come to fruition. And we've included a list of potential deals in the board package so you can see the different deals that we are working on or that are in the pipeline. I am happy to answer any questions related to this.
This is Brett Smiley. Committee members, are there questions?
I have one. This is Nick. Carrie, you do a great job watching over this. What would be the risk if we guessed wrong? We didn't have enough, or we had too many sort of projects to fund?
If we had too many projects to fund, we would need to come back to the board for additional authority. If these deals,
risk.
There would be some interest rate risk, but we wouldn't bond in advance of knowing that the deals are going to close. So we time each bond issuance with the closing of the deal. And so by doing that, we're reducing our interest rate risk.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Are there other questions for Kara? Kara, this is, do we ever get bond premium because of excess interest and oversubscription?
Occasionally, so it depends on what investors are looking for. We have started to see in the municipal market, investors are looking for premium type bonds. Because rates are so low right now, they're looking for anything they can do to, you know, make a little extra spread. So recently we have not sold any premium bonds, but that may happen in the future.
All right, thanks. If there are no additional questions, then I will take a motion to approve action item number 4.
I'll make a motion to approve. This is Steve.
Steve, thank you. Is there a second?
This is Leanne. I'll second.
Thank you, Leanne. Are there any questions or comments on the motion?
I have one more, but I'm sorry.
Please,
Nick. A little late. Yeah.
Not at all.
Kara, talk a little bit about, we're in a very strange environment as it relates to interest rate. We don't have something called interest anymore, it seems. Talk a little bit about the long-run consequences of this type of environment.
So in terms of bonding, it's a very good time for us to be issuing bonds. I think what we can do is look at our current portfolio, look for opportunities to refund bonds and to lower interest rates. I guess on the risks would be if we are, as you had mentioned before, if we were bonding before we knew we had the production, in order to satisfy those bonds. And we mitigate that by timing our bond issues related to our pipeline and what's going on in the market as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So the motion has been made by Steve and seconded by Leanne. Other questions or comments? I'll ask Nicole Clement to take a roll call vote then, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the authority to adopt the multifamily development bond, general resolution, and supplemental resolution for Series 2020 to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Resines.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Burns.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now turn our attention to item number 5, Mrs. Brett Smiley. Recommendation for the approval of authority to issue home ownership opportunity bonds in the amount of $250 million. Carol or Kara?
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Carol Ventura. Carol LaChapelle, our CFO, will present this action also.
Thank you. This is Kara. This is very similar to the last action we just discussed. This resolution is a request for authority to issue homeownership opportunity bonds up to an amount of $250 million. So this is on our single-family production side. Again, looking at the municipal market, it's a very good time for bond issuance with rates at all-time lows. We continue to finance our homeownership loans through the issuance of bonds and or by selling in the TBA market, depending on the market conditions. So this authority will provide us the flexibility to be responsive to the changes in the market and to utilize the best execution appropriate as the market changes. We anticipate the $250 million will be used over the next year to year and a half. Our last bond issue was done in June for $60 million, and we're just about finishing using that funding and anticipate starting a new bond issue next month. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Kara. This is Brett Smiley. Are there questions from the committee for Kara? Hearing none, I'll take a motion to approve item number 5.
Motion to approve. This is Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second?
This is Leanne. I'll second.
Thank you, Leanne. Are there any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Carol Ventura to please take a roll call vote.
This is Nicole Clement. Thank you, Commissioner.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nicole. Yes.
That's okay. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the authority to issue home ownership opportunity bonds to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rezina.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. This is Brett Smiley. Item number 6 is the recommendation for the approval of engagement of employee benefits and retirement brokerage and consulting firm. Carol?
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Carol Ventura. Barbara Farrand, our Director of Human Resources, will present this action.
Thank you, Carol. This is Barbara Farrand. We are requesting approval to engage with a firm qualified to perform brokerage and consulting services with respect to Rhode Island Housing's employee benefits program, which includes health and welfare plans and retirement plans. The last time we presented our request for this type of engagement was 3 years ago. In March of this year, in 2020, we posted our request for new proposals. In order to ensure that Rhode Island Housing continues to attract and retain a high-performing workforce, we want to continue to offer a competitive suite of benefits while getting the most cost-effective rates and benefit coverages. Our benefits include medical, dental, vision, life insurance, accidental death and dismemberment, supplemental life insurance, flexible spending account, long-term disability, and our retirement plans, which are our 401A and 457B. We look to partner with a consulting firm that can provide guidance and secure vendors that best fit Rhode Island Housing's needs with customized benefit offerings. When recruiting for open positions, one of the biggest concerns that candidates have is whether our company has an excellent benefits package to offer. Also, we conduct exit and stay interviews with our current employees. They also state that one of their top reasons they have stayed with Rhode Island Housing or will stay here is our benefits package. For health and welfare plans, Rhode Island Housing uses brokered consultant services to provide vendor and vendor management, evaluation of plan design, strategic recommendations to develop a benefit strategy, including both long-term, short-term strategy, and business objectives, collection and analysis of claim experience and large claim data, marketing of our benefit plans, peer group comparisons, and review plan documents and summaries. For our retirement plan services, they include helping us conduct fiduciary training and fiduciary services to maintain Rhode Island Housing's investment policy statement, analyze participant behavior and help with education strategies, provide detailed plan assessment, fee and service benchmark reporting, review and analysis of investment fund performance in accordance with the investment policy statement, and also provide investment fund recommendations. 4 firms submitted proposals in response to the RFP. A selection committee reviewed and scored the responses based on the selection criteria in the proposals, with emphasis on the firm's professional capacity to undertake the scope of work, their experience, continuity, and expertise of the account team, and capacity to offer services directly rather than subcontractors. The committee has selected Marsh & McLennan Agency, LLC, to provide consulting services for employee benefits and retirement plans. Marsh scored 89 out of a total score of 100. Marsh was selected, although they were not the lowest in fees, their industry experience and resources, the qualifications of their account team, and our positive past relationship with them will ensure that we continue to offer a competitive benefit package at Rhode Island Housing. We request that Marsh be the benefit and retirement plan brokerage and consulting firm. This will be a three-year contract with a possible two-year extension. The fees for the benefit plans will be $65,000 per year, and the fees for the retirement plans will be $45,000 per year. And I'd be happy to ask any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Barbara. This is Brett Smiley. I'm sorry if I missed this. Did we have a firm that whose contract has expired and this is a rebid?
Yes, correct. We currently have that with Marsh & McLennan, the agency that we have chosen, and their contract expires the end of September.
And how does their proposed new fee compare to what we're paying currently?
They're actually will be the same that we have over the past 3 years and will continue for the next 3 years as well.
Okay. Do other committee members have questions?
I have a couple, if I could, this in there. Is this the right time to undertake this kind of review given the strange economic environment we're in, or is this a good time to do that because of that?
It's actually a good time to do it due to the economic situation that we're in right now.
Because?
I'm sorry, the Blue Cross plan?
Yeah, well,
yes, we are looking at marketing plan. We actually marketed our medical and dental plans for this year, Nick. We are going out to market to see if Blue Cross is still competitive for us. So this is actually the perfect time to continue with the consulting and brokerage firm at this time.
Okay, thank you. Second question, if I could, unrelated. I see in the RFP process, you did a review based on experience and fee and what you would expect. And one, I think it said firm minority status, as I recollect, or some phrase like
yes,
that.
Yes, correct. Yes, we did look at that, Nick. That was one of the priorities that we had as well. And they all scored the same. Each firm had the same diversity amongst them, so one didn't have any advantage over the other.
How did you measure? What were the metrics you used with the firm in terms of whether or not they were affirmative enough?
We asked them the question on their affirmative action, and from the description that they gave to us, as well as the account team members, we did take a look at that. With Marsh and McLennan, they have become part of the diversity has become part of their core philosophy of their firm. They have joined with the greater good. Lockton had evolved within their industry, looking at their business insurance and business diversity inclusion. And the Hill Group does provide equal opportunity employment with their folks at their company. And then Gallagher, they maintain a written code of their ethics and looking at the diversity to ensure that they do have an inclusive company. So they all, each in their own summaries, represented what they are doing and will look to do in the future, and that's what we based it on.
Good, thank you very much.
Nick, do you have other questions?
That's it, I'm all set.
Barbara, this is Brett Smiley. Just to maybe a different component of the issue that Nick raised, and it doesn't give me any
yes.
pause about recommending Marsh to move forward.
Yes.
But there is a real question about whether trying to procure or rebid benefits at the moment makes sense. I just don't know how. I don't know how they possibly are going to price with so much uncertainty in the market. We don't know what rates are going to do. We don't know if things like telemedicine are going to get reimbursed or not. And so there's a great, and Marsh will be good advisors on this topic.
Yes, correct.
But I do question whether or not, quote, this is the perfect time to be looking at things like this. I think this is a very uncertain time to be looking at major changes. But I trust and respect their guidance.
Yes, Brett, I do agree with that. One of the things that we've been talking to them about, we did have a meeting with them last week, but they are actually getting quotes in, and they are doing a lot of benchmarking from what our past experience has been. So other companies are coming forward with quotes for us, but there is one that current, which is Blue Cross, that may not have our rates until the end of September, early October. So you're right that some of them may be delayed a little bit, and they are holding out a little bit this year. Normally with Blue Cross, we'll get our rates sometime in September, maybe the beginning to mid-September, but they're looking at possibly the end of September into October to get us their benefit rates from Blue Cross.
Yeah, very good. Do other committee members have questions for Barbara? Hearing none, then again, this is Brett Smalley. I will request a motion to approve action item number 6.
Motion to approve. This is Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Is there a second?
This is Leanne. I'll second.
Thank you, Leanne. Are there any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Nicole Clement to take a roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. If you are in favor of recommending approval of the engagement of employee benefits and retirement brokerage and consulting firm to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rosina.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to, this is Brett Smiley returning on, moving on to introduction, the discussion item number 1, the results from operations for the period ending 3/31/20 and 6/30/20. Carol?
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Carol Ventura. The first two discussion items that we will be sharing with the committee today relate to the financial condition of the agency. And Carol LaChapelle will present both the results from operations and the look at the agency loan loss reserves. Thanks.
Thank you. This is Kara. So we wanted to give the committee an update on our fiscal year-end results as we're closing the books and starting our audit. The numbers are not final. They're in draft form as we are finishing up our review process, so we thought we could give a high-level overview. Despite the pandemic, we did finish the year strong. Our revenues came in ahead of budget, in part from increased loan sales during the time when the municipal bond market was disrupted because of the pandemic. Our expenses came in under budget, especially in the fourth quarter, based on reduced spending. We saw reductions in seminars and training, security for the building, advertising and legal expenses, and other projects that we had hoped to get done, which were not completed. We have attached in board docs the ratios that Standard & Poor's looks at when they are rating, when they are giving us our annual rating. And we wanted to show you where we stand in comparison to the S&P criteria. So the first line of that report is the non-performing assets or our delinquent loans compared to our total loans on the balance sheet. And you can see in June of 19, that rate was 1.65%. In March, it was 1.61. And then in June of 2020, it jumped up to 2.49%. So that is a direct result of the forbearance request that we have received. We are still below S&P's criteria, where they their recommended levels, but it is something that we are carefully watching. The next line is our equity to assets, and that is below what S&P recommends. And this is something that we have been working on for quite some time. We continue to try and increase this number. It is down from June 30, 2019, slightly increasing quarter over quarter. And so that's something that we continue to focus on and will into the future to try to get to that 15% benchmark that Standard & Poor's is looking for. They also look at our return on assets. That had a significant improvement from the prior year, and we have been able to bring that up above the Standard & Poor's criteria of 50 basis points. And that's a direct tie into our net income, our bottom line number. So that will fluctuate based every year based on what we are able to accomplish in terms of net income. Our loans to asset is another criteria that they look at. They like to see that we have enough liquidity in case there is some type of problem or crisis. And so we are below their recommended criteria. They don't like to see more than 75% of your assets made up of loans. And we are below that, and we continue to improve in that ratio. What I'll do is stop there and open it up for questions. We do want to get into our loan loss reserve, which is a big estimate that could impact these numbers. But I thought maybe just at that point I could take a break and see if there are any questions on current operations.
Karen, these numbers change much over the years. I know there's some are sensitive to different factors. I don't know, it's not a quiz on what past numbers were, but do you have any sense of whether we're in the ballpark? Any reason why any of these would fluctuate substantially?
So they definitely fluctuate based on the methodology that we use for our loan financing. So if we are selling more loans in the TBA market, we're earning income in the current year. And so you will see improvement in things like the return on assets, the equity to assets. If we are bonding more, we're putting more on the balance sheet, then you may see that the equity to assets is not as strong because our assets are growing at a much larger percentage than our equity is growing. For instance, this year, we added one very large multifamily loan, Festival Fields, which was $40 million. So a loan of that size can impact these ratios. So it depends on our production levels and what we're able to achieve in terms of net income.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other questions for Kara? This is Brett. Otherwise, why don't you move on to the next, to the loan loss?
Thank you. So we did want to discuss the loan loss reserve because it is such a significant estimate on our balance sheet, and the auditors will be very involved in looking at this analysis and making sure that we've accounted for it properly. So on the single family or home ownership side, we look at our historical losses in our portfolio. We look at our current delinquencies and consider other market factors such as unemployment in the state and where real estate values are. Our losses for the past several years have been very low. We've got a lot of our portfolio has FHA insurance, so they're 100% insured, and market values, real estate values, have been increasing. So even when we do have to foreclose on a property, we have not had significant losses. At the height of losses for Rhode Island Housing was in 2013 when we had $11 million in loan losses, and that was really a result of the economic crisis back then. On the multifamily side, our asset management department prepares a watch list of properties with various risk factors, including a low debt service coverage ratio. They look at if there's been a request for reserve funds from the developments or if there's any delinquency. And each one of those properties on the watch list will be analyzed using a discounted cash flow to project the value of that project and compare it to their outstanding loans. As of June 30th, we did not have any delinquencies in our multifamily portfolio. Everyone was current with their mortgage loans. In the current year, we have increased our loan loss reserve by $4.5 million. We want to continue to increase that reserve as necessary, but particularly in this year when we know that there are going to be implications from the pandemic. The problem is that the methodologies that we have used in the past may not be a true reflection of what our potential losses will be. We have not yet seen what the final implications will be of the pandemic on our portfolio. So we will be working with our auditors to ensure that the allowance is appropriate, that we take all factors into consideration. So this may result in a change to our current year-end numbers. So last year, we had a total of $42 million for our loan loss reserve. This year, we've brought that up to $46.5 million. And when compared to our total loans outstanding, it doesn't seem like a large number, but we are increasing the percentage coverage that we have. So last year, we were at 2.7% of coverage. This year, we'll be at 2.9%. Industry standards are typically between 2 and 5%. And so each year, we have been trying to increase that coverage that we have on our balance sheet. So we just thought this was important to bring this up to the committee to let them know that we are working hard analyzing this and making sure that we will be covered for the future.
Is there any evidence related to that issue, Nick? Is there any signs, I don't want to say early, because we prolonged the moratoriums on being evicted and that problem with some of the mortgage loans that we have overall. Is there any sense that that's going to accelerate more once these moratoriums cease? Any early signs?
So yes, I mean, we have not, we have not been foreclosing on properties. There are significant amount of our portfolio that is in forbearance. And so once those moratoriums are done, and we do analyze whether these customers are able to stay with their mortgage, we will see an increase in foreclosures. Now, depending on where the real estate market is at that time, and whether or not these customers have FHA insurance, that's when we will see what the true implications are of this pandemic. But we do work with every customer. Hopefully, by that time, customers will be back to work. And we can get them on either a modification or some type of payment plan.
Nick, this is Carol. I just wanted to let you know that we are seeing delinquency come down a little bit. We're about 25 basis points lower in terms of delinquency compared to June. And I think that with some of the programs that are available, like the CARES Act fund that the governor has put out for rental assistance, our Home Safe program. You know, we're going to deploy the HHS funds to help people behind in their mortgage. I think some of those subsidy programs are going to help offset what would probably be catastrophic losses across the state in terms of people being foreclosed on or evicted.
Carol, this is Leanne. I wonder how your the end of an additional $600 a month in unemployment insurance impacts the ability for people to pay in August and beyond.
I'm sorry, there was some feedback. I didn't hear the whole question.
I was just asking as a follow-up to Carol's comment how your team is looking at the impact of the additional $600 a week in unemployment insurance expiring and people's ability to pay in August and beyond.
I'm sure it's going to be extremely impactful, Leanne. I can't imagine that. I mean, that's a huge hole for many, many people. So again, we have to hope that people are able to go back to work, hope that the, you know, the CARES Act funding and the funding that we have are able to assist them in bringing them current if they're not already current, or to help bridge the gap between being unemployed and getting back to work. So I think we all recognize that there could be a cliff here. So right now we're stable. Our multifamily side is extremely stable. We have all of our owners are current on their mortgage payments. We have about 1,600 people right now that are delinquent on our single family side, which is around 13.25%. So we know that that there could be a cliff, and we're just hoping that some of the programs can assist with that.
Is there anything we learned, thinking back a little bit, is there anything we learned from the experiences we had in 2008, 2009? Different environment, different reasons, no virus. Was there anything as an approach that we learned from that exercise?
So this is Kara. I would say it is a little bit different in that back then it was more of a real estate crisis, and we're not seeing that as of yet. Market values are still holding steady right now in the state. Obviously, we will have to continue to monitor that. I think we did learn some lessons in terms of the types of products that we are offering to our customers. We have significantly changed our portfolio to be more FHA insured, and so there's less risk of loss to Rhode Island Housing, while we're still able to give a mortgage to our low-income borrowers. I think we did also, you know, we could closely see the impact that unemployment had on our customers, as our customers tend to be sometimes the first to be unemployed when there is an economic downturn. And so we watched that, we monitor that very closely.
Thank you.
I think one thing that might be interesting, Nick, is whether or not the values fall as substantially as they did back in 2008 and 2009. You know, we were able to utilize our land bank and redevelop many, many properties as affordable. I don't know if we're going to see that same thing happen again.
Right. It's hard to have an antidote for not having a job. I mean, you have all the...
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Are there other questions for Kara? Great. Carol, do you want to move on to item number three, the Lippitt Mill update?
Yes. Lippitt Mill is a development that we provided bonding for purposes of credits, and I just wanted staff to give you an update on the status of this particular project. It's been struggling, so Ann Berman is going to give a brief overview on the current status of the project. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Good afternoon. This is Ann Berman. Lippitt Mill is a 65-unit multifamily affordable housing project in West Warwick. The original financing plan called for 28 affordable and 37 market rate units. The project closed late December 2017. It's a back-to-back tax-exempt loan financing with Citizens Bank as the construction lender, with a forward commitment from Freddie Mac for the permanent loan. Under the back-to-back structure, Citizens as the lender made a direct loan to Rhode Island Housing, and Rhode Island Housing in turn advanced the loan proceeds to the borrower. Rhode Island Housing bears no financial risk in this deal. The other sources contemplated in the capital stack were low-income housing tax credits, federal and state historic tax credits, and rebuild credits, as well as sponsor equity. The lead lender, Citizens, allowed a design-build structure for construction rather than commissioning a standard full set of 100% completed drawings and specifications. Currently, there are cost overruns estimated to be about $5.1 million, which are due primarily to structural deficiencies and historic compliance issues. Citizens has extended their note three times, including as recently as Friday, July 29th, and given the borrower until August 28th, 2020 to close on all of their supplemental financing. Citizens has also issued four reservation of rights letters to preserve their ability to foreclose. The borrowers are working on a supplemental closing to close the funding gap and complete the project. Boston Capital will purchase the low-income housing tax credits and the federal historic tax credits, replacing the existing investors. The number of affordable units will actually increase to 45, and the number of market rate units will drop to 20. A partnership between Blue Hub, who's formerly known as Boston Community Capital, and a Providence-based firm called Tax Credit Finance will purchase the state historic credits and the rebuild credits. The general partner will inject an additional $1.7 million of capital to balance the budget. They'll also defer all their fees. Collectively, they will have about $5.12 million of their own equity in the transaction. Cedar Rapids Bank and Trust will replace Freddie Mac as the permanent lender. The lenders have hired Waypoint to manage the construction, replacing the general partner as the construction manager. And the general partner is working with the general contractor to finalize the remaining contract costs so that the general contractor can get back on site. Basically, work has been stalled for the better part of about 9 months. There are several bond-related issues that we are monitoring. We have determined that the current contemplated changes to the bond documents to accommodate the supplemental closing do not require board approval. And the original note was for 2 years and was due 12/2019. The maximum allowable extension under the IRS regulations is 12 months to 12/29/2020. The note cannot be extended beyond that date without triggering a reissuance under the tax-exempt regulations of the IRS. If the project does not place in service before 12/29/2020 and there is a reissuance, the project will fail to meet the 50% test and therefore will no longer be eligible for low-income housing tax credits. That's about $2.3 million worth of equity that would be lost. If there is a reissuance and the transfer of the limited partner occurs within 6 months of that reissuance, then we would have to allocate an additional $3.8 to $4 million worth of tax-exempt volume cap, which is basically the amount of the permanent loan. And all of that was based on an analysis by Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood, who is our bond counsel. Hawkins has confirmed that should citizens need to foreclose, such a foreclosure would have no impact on Rhode Island Housing's credit rating since the loan is not recourse to Rhode Island Housing. Likewise, Hawkins does not believe that a default under the loan documents would need to be disclosed as part of Rhode Island Housing's continuing disclosure requirements under its existing bond resolutions because Rhode Island Housing is not an obligor under the documents. Citizens has given the owner until August 28th to work through the remaining issues and close on the financing. We are working closely with Citizens to monitor the progress and address issues as they arrive. And finally, if they are able to place in service, and we are hopeful that they will, First Realty Management will be the property manager. FRM has successfully managed low-income housing tax credit and mixed income deals in Rhode Island for both One Neighborhood Builders and West Elmwood Housing Development Corporation, and they would be an asset to the management of the site once it's completed. That was a lot of information. So if you have any questions between myself, Nicole, and Kara, hopefully we can answer them.
Hi, it's Brett Smiley. I guess it's going to sound simplistic, but it was a lot of information. So who will now be ultimately responsible for actually bringing this to conclusion from the development side, not from the lending side?
It will still be the current development, the ownership entity, which the general partner of which is, I think they're called Pawtucket Development Corp, but basically the managing member of that would still be responsible. The lenders, Citizens, Boston Capital, and Blue Hub have hired an independent firm to manage the construction portion. They're called Waypoint. They're based in Boston. So they would be monitoring the work of the general contractor.
And this is Carol Ventura. Ann, to be clear, what are we at, about 75% construction completion on this?
Yes. The work is, that's about right, 75%. So it is possible that if they are able to work through the last couple of issues with the general contractor, and they can start by mid-August, there is a good chance that they can get done what they need to get done to place the units in service. They basically just need to get the temporary CO from the town to place these units in service. And they have, I did confirm Friday that they are already reaching out to the town to let the town know about their schedule, put folks on notice that they'll be looking for the town to work with them in December to provide the various sign-offs.
And this is Nick. What were some of the early warning signals that this project was going to start to unravel, or could start to unravel?
Nick, that's a great question. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. And I think, quite honestly, that, you know, if we could have gone back to even before they closed, it took a long time to close this transaction. I think it revealed a little bit of, I don't want to use the word inexperience or naivete on the part of the developer, but I think if Citizens had required that they have 100% plans and specifications before we closed, that it probably would have addressed many of these issues. You know, this building is the, if I'm not mistaken, the oldest wooden mill in the state of Rhode Island, and I just don't think they knew how deteriorated it is. One of the buildings actually had to be demolished and rebuilt, and I think that's where much of this sort of these cost overruns has germinated from.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none then, again, this is Brett Smiley. There is no further business, and I will then take a motion to adjourn.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Leanne. Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments on the motion? Nicole Clement, if you could please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. When I call your name, if you are in favor of adjourning this meeting, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Commissioner Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rosina.
Aye.
Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes.
This is Brett Smiley. Thank you all for attending today. The meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Management Committee is now adjourned. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.